You're listening to Irish Illustrated Insider. It's Monday, May 3rd. We are talking about Notre Dame's blue gold game over the weekend and the NFL draft. I'm Tim Parisa with Tim O'Malley and Pete Sampson. The final score, blue 17, gold 3. In other words, defense win, offense, except for a couple drives led by Tyler Butner, came up on the losing end.
There was a lot to pick apart there, right? Like that, you know, we spend so much time on the quarterbacks, and I think that was my focus during the game. And then, you know, rewatching it, that's for me at least, that's when I can watch more of like the offensive line play. I thought, you know, that Jack Kaiser, Justin Walters were a couple guys on defense that really stood out to me. But overall, I thought Brian Kelly sort of said it best afterwards. Like, it's a good team that they need to figure out how to make a great team. Tim, I think you and I sort of wrote the same thing afterwards. Getting great might not happen, but I think you keep the pressure on to be great, to at a minimum get yourself from good to very good, which I think is sort of what this team can be.
That's why I asked him post-game about the offensive line, because the difference between good and great at Notre Dame is very often the offensive line. And he was not defensive, but he was immediate in his answer. He's like, well, Tim, and he wanted to explain to me why there are problems still. And I get it. I asked the question because I wanted it to be announced by the head coach. Look, they split the offensive linemen and they split the wide receivers. So it is harder for the offense. And when you split the defense, there's just a lot more good defensive players ready to play ball than the young offensive players. So the D was going to win the day. Jack Cohn, definitely more athletic than he can show in a red jersey. So that does hurt. But to think that you're going to celebrate your NFL draft with three offensive linemen the first three rounds plus Tommy Kramer, and all these guys lost over the last couple of years, and the offensive line is going to be a strength of the team nationally again, is ludicrous, and it won't be, but they can be better than we saw on Saturday.
Yeah, it wouldn't have mattered whether they had whatever they consider to be their first unit together. I don't think that was going to make a whole lot of difference.
Not still against hurts. That. It still hurts.
Well, it does, but I mean, not against in, that. Yeah. The true strength of this right. team, I mean, they have some really good running backs, there's no doubt about it, but the true strength of this team is the defensive front seven, in particular the depth at defensive tackle. So the O-line wasn't going to win it, regardless what Corey Robinson felt or thought might be happening on Saturday. I'm not sure what universe he was living in, but it was going to be a defensive-dominated game. And Tyler Butner sparked, the spark that he provided at the start of the third quarter and then the one late against some backups. It belonged to the defense, and that's the way we expected that it would. We're going to get into so much of the blue gold game in the second segment and a little bit of draft, but I think let's jump over to the draft because we were in the press box. Pete, you weren't within earshot, but Tim and I were, of course. And when we heard that Ian Book was picked in the fourth round by the Saints, I was pretty floored by that. Wasn't shocked by Owusu-Koramoah falling because, I mean, to the extent that he fell, I was shocked. But for him to fall, it's a niche position at 215, 218 pounds. You need the right fit. Good for Aaron Banks. That was I didn't have him in the second round, but in retrospect, that was pretty foolish not to, because he is one of the best guards. And then good landing spots for Tremble. Hainsey, third round. That's excellent for him. You know, he fits the interior line with his body type. And I think he had 32 bench press reps in the pro day. So it's a veteran football player. I think that's a really good match for him and a great get to go in the third round.
It was, I think, probably one of the more surprising drafts in terms of where guys went. Book and Banks and Hainsey all went higher than I would have thought. And Owusu-Koramoah went lower. I thought Eichenberg, Tremble, you know, even Dalen Hayes. Like, I wasn't sure with his medical history if he was going to go.
Right.
So to go in the fifth, I mean, you sort of think about, it's interesting to sort of look back at the draft and compare guys to where other Notre Dame guys went. You know, Ian Book in the fourth round. That's the same round that I think Sheldon Day went in. Sheldon Day was a really, really good college player. Ian Book was too. But going in the sixth or the seventh round, that to me is like, that's the difference between a low three star and like a two-star, I guess, in recruiting terms. Like, they're kind of the same thing. But when you get into, like, the second, third, fourth round, like, that's serious stuff.
You're expected to make the team when
I mean, that's like, you might start, you'll definitely contribute. And so that's, I think, one of the changes in Notre Dame's draft output lately is, like, I think you're seeing a higher percentage of first. They didn't have any firsts, but lately, first, second, third, fourths, and not as many fifths, sixths, and sevenths.
Yeah, I'm dating myself here, but the 49ers and Cowboys built dynasties on the second, third, and fourth round. I mean, that is literally how they built those dynasties, because those players are just as good as the first round players. They just don't get paid as much money to start out. I mean, you can grab 25 players in the second, third, and fourth round combined. Now I'm saying combined, all those rounds. And in 3 years, plop them in the first round, be like, yeah, we could pop out 25 guys for the first round, and these guys would fit in. You just don't know which ones. That's the difference, of course. Ian Book in the fourth round is incredible for him. That's great. If you would have said Ian Book in the sixth, I'd have been like, wow, good for him. Mm-hmm. But the fourth is outstanding. Another good landing spot, it seems like, with the Saints. Great for Hainsey, as you guys mentioned. I love Aaron Banks. I will say, as a 49er fan, when Owusu Koramoah was still there, I thought to myself, well, I kind of like him more than Aaron Banks, actually. But beggars can't be choosers. But I did. I thought Notre Dame had a really good draft. And just seeing all those offensive linemen go off the board has to remind you of what has been lost. And really, in the aggregate, in the last 3 years, there's the guys that didn't get drafted, like Mustafa and Bars. Bars didn't get drafted because he was hurt. But there's so many Notre Dame offensive linemen from the last 3-4 years in the NFL right now. And there's plenty of talent right now, but it's young, and they're reloading up there. And I thought the NFL draft hammered that point home when you saw those guys going off the board.
And when you lose, I mean, you lost nine draft picks and 5 free agents. That's 14 majorly significant. Maybe, you know, Brock Wright wasn't a frontline tight end.
He played a lot of blocks.
But he played a lot. No, I mean, he played a lot. But he wasn't a guy that was featured or even necessarily, I don't know how many games he actually started. But that is
you can 14, replace him. Yeah.
That is 14 main contributors, you know, from a team that went the last 2 years, 21-3, right, or whatever it was. So that's significant. Really happy for Ade Ogundeji, fifth-round pick. I had him in the fifth. It's kind of going in the seventh. Did you? I kind of got lucky there, I think. But I did have him going there. But I was, you know, I thought Eichenberg would go within the first 50 picks, and he was 42nd. I blew it on Banks because I should have had him higher. And then, you know, the free agents, I guess the Lions like former Notre Dame players as a free agents because they signed three of them in Kramer, McKinley, and Wright. So, you know, and I think Nick McLeod, if he can be healthy, I think he's got a chance as a free agent.
Yeah, I agree. Good output, I think, for Notre Dame.
Yeah.
No, Nick McLeod healthy is a player. He's like the guy where you say second, third, and fourth, or it could be as good as first. He's undrafted. That could be as good as a fourth. He just
ton of experience has been a captain, press coverage, physical. He really does have a chance. So we're going to talk again, saving all the blue gold game stuff for second segment coming up, burning up the boards. Segment two, burning up the boards. I promised it would be a main focus on the blue gold game. We're going to start with two NFL draft related questions, starting with Terry Benedict. From recruit to draftee, who outperformed their rankings? Who underperformed?
I mean, Book outperformed his ranking, of course. And Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, I had him third, Tim had him fourth in that class. But Tommy Kramer, right, would underperform because he was the top-ranked player at Notre Dame for most of his 5 years.
Yeah.
One of the three best offensive linemen, right?
No, he was not. And, you know, Brock Wright was rated highly, probably too highly by those of us in the business. Javon McKinley was a 4-star wide receiver that ended up being a free agent. But Ade Ogundeji is a 3-star that, you know, he needed all 5 years, used it well, came a million miles. Think about where he was, where he is now as a fifth-round draft choice and where he was as a true freshman and redshirt freshman. Kudos to him. He's a great kid, and he got a lot better while at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
I agree with all that. I think that, you know, Book was super impressive. And then, in some ways, I guess Aaron Banks is, if you're a mid four star going, the second round is still a little bit over over where you were ranked. But, you know, it's sort of interesting looking back. You think, you know, we were talking about, you know, will Banks come back to play left tackle? Could Hainsey come back to play center? Like, they went in the second and third round. Like, you look back and those questions, like, those were kind of dumb questions, but I understand why we asked them.
Yeah, I don't think we were looking at second and third round.
Right.
Maybe third and fourth or maybe fifth. But, yeah, you know, I mean, Dalen Hayes was rated highly. He's dealt with so many injury issues in high school and at Notre Dame that I think that that certainly impacted his performance at Notre Dame. Fifth round, I'm sure he would have expected coming out of high school that he'd go higher than that. But he has an opportunity. So
how about Ben Skowronek's career move? Go graduate from Northwestern, transfer to Notre Dame, play for the playoffs, and get drafted.
That's just a
heck of a calendar year for Ben Skowronek.
I mean, I think he brings assets. You know, he doesn't have great burst off the line of scrimmage, but he has good size. He catches the ball really well. He high points the football well. He boxes people out, uses his frame. I think he's got a shot. I mean, I like the way he played last year. I wish he would have stayed at Notre Dame for another year.
Irish from A2. Notre Dame has had 20 players drafted over the last three classes, the best stretch for Notre Dame since the early 90s. To what or whom do you attribute most of the success? And Irish from A2 asks, is it Matt Bayless or Clark Lee? I would throw in myself, Brian Kelly, to that
duo. I would put Brian Kelly at the top of the list because he is the leader of the organization. But there's no doubt that Matt Bayless has brought this program along in leaps and bounds with what they've done with the strength and conditioning program. And, you know, Clark Lee was a product or a co-representative of the defense created by Mike Elko. So, I mean, those guys, bring in a lot of quality players, recruiting a lot of quality players. But first and foremost, come on, it's Brian Kelly, is it not? He's the leader of the organization.
Yes, Kelly won. I would go Bayless two over.
I would too.
Okay.
I agree.
If we had to really rank it, that was kind of what I wanted to get Kelly down that path today on a Zoom call, but didn't really get there. Just about the impact Bayless has had on improving the draft position and the wins. Cause yeah, it's like, I think in exit interviews with Chip Long and Clark Lee, you ask them like, okay, what's really working? They both are like, they say Bayless before you finish the question. So that's a big
belief. Now we have to acknowledge that the Elko Lee team totally transformed the defense from what they inherited. Yeah. So
although
the previous coordinator, there was never really, it wasn't a matter of lacking talent per se, but those two guys brought it all together.
The Brian Kelly point though, they had 16 guys drafted in a 3-year stretch, 14, 15, 16. And it would have been somehow it was only Ben Koyak in the middle of that. So, I mean, you should have had 19 basically. That 16 in a 3-year stretch is good. As Tim said, what, you're not good because you didn't go in the seventh, but you went in the seventh? I mean, there's plenty of semantics involved here. And then, the players themselves. I mean, someone asked Brian Kelly this question. Was it you, Pete? And Brian Kelly said he gave the players credit. They're internally driven to become great, and they are mentally tough enough to follow the coaching process of college football that is obviously not for everybody, as we will get to later.
Question from Notre Dame fan 5931. Yes, good point, Tim. We'll get to that in a second. Do you think there is a role for any summer enrollees on the field next year? In other words, the non-early entry freshmen.
You know, Brian Kelly mentioned Kari G.
Yeah.
I'd say that's probably true. However, if how Justin Walters played on Saturday is indicative of where he's going, then maybe that's the fourth safety. But beyond that, I have a hard time seeing it. I'm not sure who would do it.
Yeah.
Because I know, Tim, I know you like Tucker. There's just a lot of corners that look like they could help out a lot. Is that, you know what I'm saying? That if a couple of them already been there, it doesn't mean he can't move up to the fourth corner. I want to throw a name out there because I never pegged him as a first-year contributor, but his body type is way different than their other receivers. So Deion Colsey is just a different they don't like, they have quick little guys right now. If Kevin Austin is not back and Kevin Austin, they are they're the smallest little quick, they're like the Smurfs out there, the receiving core. So that would maybe get him a chance at W. I know that W spot is pegged for a healthy Kevin Austin, but we have to see the healthy Kevin Austin first.
Yeah. We'll talk more about the receivers later, but I think the receiving core is in trouble if Kevin Austin doesn't emerge, and then somebody of similar body type or actually larger, Deon Colsey. Kari G, I think, Pete, your point's well taken. He brings a lot more size to the position than Walters does. And when the head coach points it out, unsolicited, like we always say, it's meaningful. Could JoJo Johnson maybe have a role as nickel? That's a possibility. You know, I think a few months ago we would have said Prince Kali, but the way Kaiser had played this spring,
I feel like you could get him into something. Prince Kali, you know, he's got to beat out Pryor, which he can do if he's as good as we think he is.
Yeah.
Mawala is just, I want to see Paul Mawala 11 months removed from that surgery. That's tough. That's just tough. I mean, he'll be better in 2022 than 2021, Paul Mawala.
I remember Brian Kelly said they would have him this spring.
Yeah, he was kind of there. I mean, that's tough, Audric, one, but I like
Audric Estime. I know that there really isn't room at running back, and their running backs are really good, but Audric Estime, I think, just brings it. Skill set, although Logan Diggs is a big play guy too, so I don't know where they fit in. They have enough trouble playing three, let alone four or five. But
somebody will. We can't pinpoint it as easily, but somebody will. Look, it was Clarence Lewis last year, and nobody would have said that in May 3rd podcast last year.
Yeah.
Dip 98, offensive line. Can you walk through the individuals who are in the running for starting jobs and give me some quick feedback on how each one performed?
All right, we've talked a ton about this. Let's try to summarize it quickly. Here's how I would do it. I think there are four guys that definitely start. Jared Patterson, Zeke Correll, Josh Lugg, and Blake Fisher. I think those are those guys showed this spring that those are the four best. Then comes Dylan Gibbons, Rocco Spindler, maybe not necessarily in that order, Tosh Baker, and I would put Kristoffic, I guess, eighth.
Eighth, yep.
I think there are eight guys that could start, four definitely. I don't think Baker and Kristoffic start. So really, I think they're choosing among six guys for five starters, frankly.
Yeah, I wrote that story yesterday with that same order, and I do think Baker is behind the Spindler Gibbons who will start duo as long as Lugg is healthy and Patterson's healthy.
Now where everybody is placed, another longer story that we'll debate 500 times between now and then. Pete, what do you think?
I agree with what you're saying. Gibbons will be interesting because I think he does not fit at center based on snapping that we saw on Saturday. But he does fit on guard because he's already fit at guard. You know, we've seen him do that. But I don't know. I don't know where they'll go with that because I thought Spindler showed that he's been in the weight room at Notre Dame for 3 months on Saturday. And whether it was going against Mills or Heinisch or MTA, he got walked back pretty quickly.
Oh, man, Heinisch walked him right back. Yeah. I don't remember which quarterback, but it was like, he was backpedaling for about 12 steps, and he wasn't he couldn't stop the momentum.
A lot of room for growth there, which is exactly how it should be for early enrollee freshman. Yeah. But I thought that there was I'd have to see who they're blocking, but Lugg is so much more equipped right now than Baker in terms of, again, college weight room, strength, all that kind of stuff at right tackle.
And I thought Blake Fisher toyed with Isaiah Foskey the whole afternoon.
He was good. He was really, really good, Fisher.
Yeah. To Pete's point, a finer point on Gibbons, he had the hardest job by far, having to play center and never playing center. And he's a much better guard than center. And look, he was playing center because they have to have a backup center that's not named Jarrett Patterson and Josh Lugg in order for them to function. So that's why he's playing center. If you really, really need a new center, it's Jarrett Patterson, right? I mean, it's not, okay, Dylan Gibbons, let's work through this. It's no, Dylan Gibbons plays guard, Patterson plays center. So if this Correll, is a spring game thing.
Yeah, if Correll is injured, Patterson has to move. I mean, pretty much has to move.
Yeah, back. I mean, why would you not? You just got to do it.
That's really probably the smartest way to look at it, that, like, you need a backup center for practice, but if you had to play in a game, it would be Patterson, and you just you'd draw one of those other guards.
Yeah. And you need a backup center to come in for those two snaps where Patterson gets ready to go play center and you have to figure out who's playing left tackle or right tackle. I mean, there's got to be a quick move when Zeke Correll gets hurt and it's somebody running in. It's not Jarrett Patterson running down and snapping from tackle. So
it's still, as much experience as Patterson has at center, you almost have to give him some reps. I mean, offense doesn't stay the same from last year to this year. And if he never gets any snaps at center and then Correll gets hurt, to throw him in at center and expect him to just hit the ground running, not having played it, I think that's really, really difficult. So there are plenty of conversation ahead with regard to the offensive line. DMB 346. How much stock should we put into how Cohn, Pine, and Butner perform? Do you think Butner put himself in a position to win the backup job at least, or should we take his and Cohn's and Pine's performances with a grain of salt?
It's the blue goal game. I take it all with a grain of salt. It's a blue goal game. I like the way Tyler Buchner looked. And if you just look at the blue goal game, Tyler Buchner looked fine as a chance to start for the Notre Dame football team, but you know, that's not how they entered the blue goal game. So that's not how Notre Dame's coaches exited the blue goal game either.
I view Buchner's spring as he has checked the box that he will be Notre Dame's quarterback of the future, that will be a recruiting hit. That doesn't mean it will be a recruiting hit this year. But I think when spring practice started, like, you never know. Like, you just don't know how these guys are going to transition. But so I thought that was huge for Buchner, even if he never plays this season. Cohn was superior to Pine the way I watched the game and rewatched the game. I also thought Cohn had a lot of room that he could improve. And O'Malley, you made this point. I think the red jersey probably hurt him. After he missed Avery Davis, he had a really nice scramble that, you know,
called back.
I think it would have been a first and goal.
Right.
But instead, it's a fourth and 17. Yeah.
So. And he fit a really difficult pass into Avery Davis moving to his right. He also had what could have / should have been a touchdown pass to Joe Wilkins, but Litchfield Ajavan lit up Wilkins at the goal line and knocked the football loose. But, you know, we always say it, watching the game from the ninth floor of the press box and evaluating quarterbacks fully is just, it's just so difficult because there's so much on our plate and so much for us to see. And when I sat down and rewatched the TV version of it, I didn't think that Drew Pine had a very good day. I mean, I thought he made some throws. The ball of the 42-yarder right at the end of the first half was a good throw, a little underthrown, but he had to fit it into a gap. But
that pass to Lindsay, I thought was really impressive.
That was really nice. But, you know, we have a tendency, like, okay, Buchner, the shiny new toy. So there's a tendency to overlook the things that he didn't do well. He threw a sideline pass that fell and hit the turf. He got the ball stripped from him. The read option for a touchdown. I mean, that's a weapon. He's good at it. He's quick. He's a really, really good runner. He did some good things, but again, it's not going to two series in a blue goal game is not going to change the depth chart heading into the offseason. That's in the real world of college football. It just doesn't work that way.
I agree with you, but I believe this going into the spring, and I think the same thing now. I do think Pine's the third best overall quarterback on the Notre Dame football team.
As far as skill set.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you. Even though, I mean, we all agree. Pine gets rid of the ball quickly. He threw the ball well this spring.
Brendan Clark is probably one of the three best in terms of skill sets on the Notre Dame football team. He's just not available. Yeah.
Just not sure when he's going to be available either.
That's an interesting one.
Question from Prez_Kennedy. I understand Cohn looked good enough to be the starter, but from what I saw, Buchner has to have a short yardage and red zone package, right? Great skill set and confidence there. We're talking about one play now, one play. And it was an impressive one. It was a really impressive one play.
I mean, I was impressed by his first play when he like ran a circle around Myron Tagovailoa-Mosa.
Oh yeah, in the blue jersey. No, the fake out was a nice juke. Yeah.
Oh no, I give the credit to MTA. He shut off the outside edge, and he only gained 4 yards on it. He kept a little guy.
He looked quick as heck in front of him. He looked really quick in that spot, though. That was a
Yeah, you could just sort of see like, okay, yeah, I get it. No, I don't think he has to have a short yardage package.
I think Cohn with a blue jersey has a fine short yardage package for himself.
Now, if they were to decide that based upon the read option skills that he has, right. I could understand that. But I'm not, again, you're not, we're going to make that decision based upon one play.
Right. They did that with Ian Book in 2018. And it was the weirdest thing ever because we figured Brandon Wimbush would be good at the goal line. But they also did it with Ian Book because we found out later Ian Book won the job. And he was better at that stuff and he was better at other things, too.
And they wanted to get him on the field.
And they wanted to get him on the field.
He might be the starter.
That's a little different. Hey, Beasley, biggest surprise of the blue goal game?
Mitchell Evans.
That's who I wrote down.
Not only the three catches, one of them for 32 yards, but some feedback that I got from on the field Saturday that indicated that is a big, talented athlete. I think there were times where he struggled a little bit in the spring. We saw sometimes where Kane Barong had some holding penalties that in practice situations aren't called, but I thought Evans looked good. And then the feedback I got from somebody that got that was up close and personal said a lot of ability there with Mitchell Evans.
Mitchell Evans talking to somebody inside the group was, I think, a very pleasant surprise for the staff. Because I don't think they really knew what they had based on the weirdness of recruiting for the last year.
Playing quarterback.
All right, big body, like, he can run around. Can he play tight end? Who knows? Let's find out. So I think that they were very pleased with him. He was a pleasant surprise.
Anybody else? We all zeroed in on him.
You know, Cam Hart did some good stuff. I know he got beat on the first play, but I liked – overall, what I saw there, and I say that in the sense of, like, I really, Brian Kelly has talked him up and Marcus Freeman has talked him up, but, you know, we've only seen, like, bits and pieces of it.
Yeah, like, I like it.
Boundary corner and Freeman's scheme is critical. So I thought that was good.
Yeah, I like Cam Hart's body language and the way he's carrying himself. He carries himself like he knows he's a starter. I don't know that that's officially been determined, but now they have – you know, now they have three legitimate corners. And another surprise for me would be Ramon Henderson, who I thought was physical on Saturday when he showed up around the football as well.
I mentioned the first, I would say Jack Kaiser. I just like the game looks very slow to him. I love how he just seems in command of everything that's happening, especially in the pass game. He's somebody that I would predict would make a very, very high percentage of the tackles that he's presented with. So I'm not saying he's going to replace Owusu Koromoa, but I do think they have a really good player at that position.
And on the other end of the depth chart, Litchfield Adjavon played well.
He really played.
Sorry, man. I know we've been told for years that he won't make an impact, so we go with what people tell us.
No, I'm glad you pointed that out, because he was really physical. He did a really, really nice job.
Talked a lot too. He's a little talkative guy.
Yeah, he sure did. Hey, I know I've been saying this all spring, and nobody knows better than you guys that I repeat myself a lot. But MTA coming off the edge on Saturday to see it live and to see the whole feel around him. I am just, Brian Kelly said it when spring started. I never expected him to look that agile and flexible coming off the edge. I think he looks great.
No, I just thought it was a move because the numbers said it. It turns out it's a move because the numbers say to make the move and because he's apparently very well equipped to play the position. So that's the best reason for a move. Jim_Booney, I think we already hit this one. What position group do you have the most questions about following the blue goal game?
I don't know that we really hit it. Pete, and yeah, I worked off of your question. It's interesting because in our business, sometimes you ask a good question and get a bad response. Sometimes you ask a bad question, get a good response. Pete asked a good question. I got a good response that most of the media corps ran with. And anyway, as far as position groups, I mean, I'm sorry. I don't see any answers at safety. We can talk about Houston Griffith and DJ Brown but I don't see any solutions to the questions. I like KJ Wallace. I thought he was around the football again, like we saw throughout the spring. And I thought Houston Griffith peered into piles of players a lot. I thought he did a good job of that. But
I thought the O'Malley's question to BK about the offensive line was good, and I think got the response that we all sort of expected, right? Like, hey, we got a lot of rebuilding to do here. I thought his answer about the wide receivers may have been more telling, because it was, we have a bunch of seniors who are not playing like fundamentally sound football. And that's kind of an uncomfortable place to be, because if they can't get something from Lindsey Wilkins, and like they all had productive spring games statistically, right? But Keys was targeted 14 times.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That was pretty low catch percentage.
Yeah.
You know, Wilkins was, you know, had the drop. He had the route on third down that was run below depth, and he got blown up by Kaiser and I think Wallace. So to me, it's like receiver is what we thought it was. Either Kevin Austin is going to be healthy, or I think the passing game is going to have some
issues. I totally agree. My point about, you know, the question about good and great, or the response about good and great, I don't see greatness at wide receiver. And the only way that they can bridge that gap is if Kevin Austin is a 60, 65 catch guy with 7 or 8 touchdowns, which is
possible.
I still believe that it's within the realm of a possibility, regardless what's happened in the past, but there is not greatness at wide receiver. And without greatness at wide receiver in 2021 and some other reasons, I don't see a great football team. If we're talking about a year from now and they had 15 spring practices, I think we easily would have been saying that. Yeah. I don't see greatness with this football. I see, you know, the front seven on defense. Well, that's a tremendous thing to build around, but I don't see greatness at wide receiver. Certainly don't see greatness at safety next to Kyle Hamilton.
The one way I'd stick up for them is if Kevin Austin is healthy and good and 8 touchdowns and 55 catches, there's a trickle-down effect that makes Avery Davis better, Braden Lindsey, and Lawrence Keys better.
Absolutely. And then,
if Joe Wilkins isn't going to be assignment correct and perfect, he does not have the ability of Kevin Austin, Lawrence Keys, Avery Davis, and Braden Lindsey. So what are you – I mean, move on. Like, he has to be – how is he not assignment correct? He seems like he would be assignment correct. He's – a veteran that knows what it takes to get on the football field. That is, you cannot miss that. That'd be like Tommy Reese as a quarterback not being correct in his reads.
No, and that's where Xavier Watts, not really sure exactly where with each position that they play, but that's where Xavier Watts, they need him to beat out Joe Wilkins, because there's a limitation on Joe Wilkins' skill set. I'm going to skip ahead to a question here because it's going to talk I want to talk about another young receiver in addition to Xavier Watts. It's from CMU Pens fan. Are we destined to see not as many 4 to 5 wide receiver packages this year based on the simple fact that Notre Dame's top skill players are Chris Tyree, Kyren Williams, and Michael Mayer?
Yes, but we knew that going into the game, right?
Yeah, and they showed some of that too. Like, the very first snap of the game was 10 personnel, which I don't think they ran a single time all last season. Where there was no tight end on the field. But yeah, I think that if you're Tommy Reese, you're probably looking at me like, all right, Austin is healthy, Mayer is healthy, and I have Kyren and Tyree. Those guys are on the field pretty much all the time. And then we'll rotate, you know, sometimes we'll do 2 tight ends with George Sakis.
Well, and you have some good, you know, Davis, Lindsey, Keys are, you know, those are top skilled position athletes as well.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely use Avery Davis quite a bit. But it just – I don't know. I think they have
Well, Davis, 4 to 5 – the 4 to 5 receiver thing.
Put Davis into the – make that a group of 5 with Davis.
Yeah. I mean, yes. Michael Mayer is your number one receiver. So if you want to say you're going to have 1 running back and 4 wide receivers, if Michael Mayer is one of your receivers, sure. You can have all the 4 wide receivers out there you want. Split them wherever you want to put them. But he's never coming off the field on a play that matters. So you can't have more than 3 wide receivers. That's the one way to look at it. There's a math problem here. And Michael Mayer and the running back don't come off the field. And then Tyree's the next best player by a wide margin.
Well, one guy that we know won't be in the mix, as we anticipated after the podcast started, Jordan Johnson has entered his name in the transfer portal. That was expected as of this weekend coming out of the Blue Gold game, at least behind the scenes. And so people can now point fingers at Dell Alexander and Brian Kelly for not maximizing Jordan Johnson's talent. But Pete, as in conversations that we've had, Jordan Johnson, first of all, I can't stand the talk anymore about Jordan Johnson, the five-star receiver. He was never a five-star receiver. I had Tim, I don't know where you, I had him ranked seventh in there in that recruiting class. The coaching staff has learned that this is not a, it's, he's not a top level receiver, and that's why he didn't play.
Yes, I agree 100% with all that. I do think the off the field stuff academically was hard for him, as Brian Kelly referenced last season. That could be a killer. And if you get behind early, it is really hard to dig yourself out of that hole, depending on how far you got behind. And then, you know, just from a football perspective, he had zero catches in the spring game. I think he was targeted once. I believe there was a play in the first half where they tried to run a wide receiver screen to him, and he blew the play. Like, he didn't know what he was doing, and he blocked instead of trying to come back for the catch from Drew Pine. Drew Pine ends up getting sacked on the play because he has nowhere to throw it. And then at the end, you see Jordan Johnson put his hand on his head like, ah, I screwed up. Like, it's all right. I mean, this is like, this is big time college football. Like, you got to produce. And I don't get the sense that that really ever happened.
Yeah, I had him sixth in the class. Now looking back, I did have him ahead of Xavier Watts. So you guys were correct ahead of me, because I believe you guys both had Xavier Watts ahead of Jordan Johnson. So Pete and Tim, I tip my hat to you on the wide receiver color. No, I had him sixth in the class. No. I mean, no, but seriously, instead of bad, I mean, good luck to this, Tim, this transfer. He's going to land somewhere like Illinois or Missouri or whatever. And then I think he'll have another landing spot after that. As do most Notre Dame wide receiver transfers. That is my prediction, that he will have two transfers.
Okay, I know there was a defense of him for only getting targeted once during the Blue Gold game. Well, he's responsible. He's responsible for being targeted as well.
They tried to target him a second time, and he didn't run the right play.
I don't know what to say. He was never as good as he was rated. So that's the ratings people's mistake.
If you want to be mad at, there's another good receiver transfer. I mean, Stefferson wasn't the same thing. Stefferson got kicked out of the school. He played immediately and starred immediately. But if you want to be frustrated that Kevin Austin hasn't done anything yet as a top 100 receiver, Javon McKinley was one top 120 and it took 5 years, and Jordan Johnson is now leaving as a top 50 receiver, I get it. But you look at the player.
Right. I'm not saying that they're doing a tremendous job at developing receivers. I don't know that they couldn't develop this receiver. I'm not sure what they could have done to develop this receiver. And in the meantime, you know, there were plenty of fingers being pointed around at everybody but the player himself.
Kevin Stefferson showed up on campus as a freshman, under recruited freshman, and Brian Kelly took one look at him and said, "That guy's in my plans." And Brian Kelly broke his rules of traits to put him in the game because he was that good at football. He literally said after the season, "I went with talent over traits." And he wasn't talking about someone else. It was Kevin Stefferson and guys like that. If you're really good, the second you show up, they notice and they find a way. If you're pretty good and you don't do things right, you get sent to the side as a freshman. I do think if you don't flash as a freshman, they think, all right, what else do we have? That I get that. But if you're great, you come in, they see it, you're going to play, man. I mean, he dominated the moment. Look at Kevin Stefferson. They thought, that guy is killing our players. We have to play him. Jordan Johnson clearly was not killing the defenders.
I've never known a coach who played somebody that he didn't feel gave him the best. You know, I mean, I'm going to play somebody that doesn't give me the best chance to win. Who does that? Why would anybody do that?
I was going to say, have you ever coached first grade flag football?
Well,
you bench people for no reason, don't you, Pete?
But I mean, like, okay, you've heard me say this before too. When I was in coaching, I was like, well, why don't you give so-and-so a chance to, because I don't have to hit myself over the head with a hammer to know it's going to hurt. You're not going to put somebody in a situation where you know they're going to fail. So anyway, I don't mean to rip on Jordan Johnson. I'm just ripping on the people that blindly defended him without taking into consideration why he really wasn't playing. So we wish Jordan Johnson the best, but it just wasn't going to work in Notre Dame.
Going back up to C. Domer, what were your thoughts on the cornerback playing the blue gold game outside of Cam Hart? Has anyone else emerged to solidify the two deep? He did not say starting position. He said two deep.
Yeah, he said, yeah. Ramon Henderson. I mean, he was – Brian Kelly singled him out, and I thought he was physical. Philip Riley, is he there yet? I don't know. We saw a lot of him in the spring, and he was playing ahead of Caleb Offord. Caleb Offord did some good things in the blue gold game. I don't know how much of a future he has though with Notre Dame at cornerback, but Ramon Henderson. So, I mean, I think you feel really, you feel very good about three of the guys because Bracey had a good spring and Clarence Lewis is a starter, plain and simple. That's set.
And I think
Henderson and Hart gives you your four.
Yeah. I was just going to say that I know he's a safety, but he's also a nickel, which is part of the solution. Like KJ Wallace did a bunch of good stuff too. So
if you have, I really like it.
KJ Wallace, Bracey and Wallace.
Yeah.
I like that.
I think they have a really good number two corner for college football playoff contention in Clarence Lewis. And then four guys that are a third and fourth corner for college football playoff contention.
No, I agree.
And they could use a number one corner. And I don't mean shut down corner. Troy Pride.
Yep.
Julian Love is out this world for that. But that's a good Nick McLeod. You know, Nick McLeod was a good number one corner last year.
A question from Jay Jude. Kane Barong and Mitchell Evans really flashed in the blue gold game. Do you think that might lead to Kevin Bauman transferring?
I think they like Bauman. I don't have the official word on why.
Well, he's hurt. He was on the list of guys that were.
Right. I don't know what was wrong with him, though.
Yeah, I believe
it was a rib injury. And he just has been. It was.
You know what? I think you're right. I think you're right. Yeah, I think it was a rib injury. I mean, Bauman's hurt. He's not going to transfer.
No, but it hurts. Outside the transfer, it hurts to be hurt in the spring when Mitchell Evans plays well and George Takacs is rising up. I do get that. But Kevin Bauman's not a transfer candidate. But he is a candidate to have to now battle Mitchell Evans, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah. I want to read this one, Tim, even though we skipped it because it's funny. Wash ND, when you saw Jordan Battelle beat Tosh Baker on the edge with a clean pass to the quarterback, did you, for at least a moment, fear for Pine's safety, regardless of his red jersey?
I did. It did not occur to me, but I certainly understand because he just doesn't know how to walk away from a situation where he can't make contact.
His one-hand touch was so violently physical. It was like, was it on Pine? It was on Pine, right? Where he smacked him to sack him. It was like, Pine's probably like, dude, chill it out for a second.
Because Pine had his back completely to him, so he had no idea who it was, although he may have suspected immediately after it happened, but he was probably surprised that he got shoved to the ground because he wasn't anticipating it. But
just because it's one hand touch doesn't mean it can't be an illegal hand to the face.
Exactly. Doesn't mean I can't be physical with him. Okay. Donnelly 3434. How confident are you Kevin Austin returns to full strength, ready to go as the number one wideout that Notre Dame needs?
0% confident, 100% hopeful.
Scale of one to five. How confident are you?
Confident? Zero. Okay.
I'll give him
zero?
One. Yeah, I'm hopeful five. I'm confident zero. Why would he be bad? Why would it work? There's no evidence. There's zero. There is no evidence whatsoever. He's going to come back and be ready to roll and be good.
His injury's not going to heal? It could not. It might not.
I don't know. It didn't last time. he was out one play after he came back. Like one game.
Bonzi Colson's playing basketball again. No, I get it. I mean, how can your confidence level be zero? He's still on a roster.
Well, if it has to be one to five, it's one. But other than that, it's not. I have him high. Hey, we're doing our countdown. I have him high in the countdown because I'm hopeful. I cling to false hope.
One to five, Pete.
One.
He's never done it.
I realize that, but well, I said last year he's going to lead team receptions. So my confidence level is 4.
Well, that's good. Combine your confidence with my hope and we're in business. Mac 341, what are your impressions of Marcus Freeman's defense after the blue gold game?
You know, it was interesting. I had to watch it on TV again because we got so much going on in the press box. But interesting, there were not supposed to be any blitzes, but boy, there were a hell of a lot of blitzes on Saturday. I think this is really great. There's a lot of faking and feigning by the linebackers at the line of scrimmage, which I'm surprised actually that more teams don't do, because when a linebacker threatens to hit the A gap, the center is alerted to it. The guard is alerted to it. And certainly the quarterback can see it. All it takes is just a little bit of timing thrown off. And now you've kind of changed the line of scrimmage in favor of the defense. I think it's very interesting. All the stuff that they do pre-snap, because I think it makes an offense think about a lot of things pre-snap that there's a lot to think about as it is, let alone the constant faking and sometimes actually blitzing in a blue goal game where you're not supposed to blitz.
Yeah. And I mean, I think they have good, like not every linebacker is good at blitzing, but Maris Leifau and Bo Bauer are sort of made for it. Like, I would buy a ticket to watch Maris Leifau run into a brick wall. Like he doesn't always get through like Chris Tyree stoned him, but the sort of reckless abandonment that he plays with, I think it's gotta be pretty exciting for Freeman to turn loose. So yeah, it didn't look like it was super complicated, but Brian Kelly did say before the game, like it's gotta be pretty vanilla, but it's like, if that's vanilla.
Yeah, there were no, yikes. I mean, they're going to bring pressure from the third level, and they didn't do that on Saturday.
Yeah, right. I thought, I mean, I guess we're getting to this with the linebackers, but I thought Shane Simon on run blitzes has a knack for it now too.
I may have said this in previous podcasts. I like him just crashing the line of scrimmage. It forces him to be physical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which there was a comment made, apparently Marcus Freeman made a comment to the TV guys that, you know, he's really been on Shane Simon to maximize his ability. And that's what we've been saying all along. And if you force him to be physical right at the snap of the football,
yep,
I think that's beneficial to him and beneficial to Notre Dame's defense.
Ryan Millam, 1973. Should I be surprised the defense, particularly the secondary, was the strength of the team Saturday?
Nope.
Maybe the secondary, but I thought the defensive front and the linebackers were the strength of the team.
The front seven of this team, I mean, the defense, that's – no, and that's why I'm saying it. Why would anyone have expected a high-scoring blue goal game if you evaluated all the things that were going on offensively and defensively?
I don't know. That's like with Notre Dame's starting offensive line, I think, would get beat by Notre Dame's starting defensive line if it was ones versus ones.
I agree.
However, Notre Dame's number two offensive line would be pillaged and plundered by Notre Dame's second defensive line. So it's like you weren't winning either of those matchups.
Which is what we saw frequently during the first 14 practices when we would get the 3-minute clips, right? I mean, even the number two defensive line against the number two offensive line is a mismatch.
The number two defensive line against the number one offensive line is what you're saying, right?
I'm saying number. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Because the number one offensive line, whatever it is still very young and inexperienced.
Cross, Mills, Justin Adamiola, and Botello with the three linebackers that start is a better front seven than the offensive line could face. That would beat them. They would beat them. I agree with you.
Yeah. Need a turnover. Are you as bullish as me on the linebackers? Loved what I saw of Leifau, Simon, Kaiser, and Bauer. I'm on board.
Yeah. It's like they all grew up in a, you know, like they just improved ever since we've been watching.
They had to play last year.
And they have White.
Oh yeah, Drew White. I mean, Drew White,
top 10 player on the team, so that's a good thing.
Just, I mean, it's interesting. Like we always get like the question of like the the Jonas Gray, Javon McKinley, like, but we never mentioned Shane Simon as a guy for that, and maybe we should.
Yeah, it's he had, that was a nice interception too. And his read, I mean, you know,
his was, and that was a really bad decision. That was Cone that threw that, right?
Correct.
That was a really bad decision there, because there was no way Kyren Williams was ever going to catch that pass. And well played by Simon. Simon showed last year that he's pretty darn good in coverage. And Pete, you make a good point, because I can, you know, I have a tendency to turn some players into whipping boys and to keep pounding the point home. But there was one shot where you just saw him walking off the field and you just saw how physically imposing he is. You can understand why Marcus Freeman is doing everything he possibly can to maximize his ability, because if he could get the physicality tool involved here, he has a chance to be pretty good. I think you make a good point, Pete. We are going to conclude with a question from C. Frazier, and it is, after making it through spring football, what position, if any, do you see the coaches pursuing a grad transfer?
Well, it would be wide receiver 1, safety 2A, and offensive line 2B. I just say offensive line 2B because it's hard to find one that could come in and start. I'm not going to find an offensive lineman, I don't think. I don't know the portal. You might find one, but you got to find one that's better than Spindler and Gibbons' possibilities at guard and better than Baker as a tackle, right? That's just a hard
to see that, right?
That's a hard sell for me. So 2 safeties, 3 offensive line. I'm going to say the same thing I said at cornerback before the spring started. They have 8 corners. I think they just dance with what they have at this point. Well, and
I think you roll with the offensive line now with what Fisher and Spindler showed this spring.
Yeah.
I think you just go ahead and roll with that. I would a safety. I mean, I would take a safety in a heartbeat, and a big wide receiver. I would still take, because you just don't know. I mean,
if you take away Austin's athletic ability as just a receiver or downfield threat, I do think that was one thing I watched the game thinking, like, man, they really missed Javon McKinley here in the run game.
It adds up, man. There's him, Ben Skoranek.
They just did not the physicality on the edge to like put a cornerback in his place. They don't really have that. Just not a receiver room built to do that. So that if you could find a big body like that, like a Ben Skoranek, I think you would do that in a second.
It's to think that they got McLeod last year in May. I mean, that's kind of.
Yeah. Get a safety named Nick McLeod in June. He'll be all set. Right. That'd
make a difference.
That's crazy.
Well, hey, it was a good spring. We saw way more than we saw last year, which is great. We have O'Malley and I and our staff will be putting together our top 190 in the countdown starting next week sometime. So great to be back in Notre Dame Stadium. Again, thank you, Notre Dame, for honoring Lou Somogyi. It meant a lot to us, and it was a good spring. Good. Now there's talk about, Jack Swarbrick talked about how very optimistic he is about getting a whole bunch more players or fans in the stadium for this fall. So hopefully things are continuing to trend in the right way for Notre Dame and college football and in the world in general, I guess. But, appreciate you joining us. We'll be back next week with Irish Illustrated Insight.
Thank you for listening to the Irish Illustrated Insider podcast. If you enjoy our coverage of Notre Dame football, please consider supporting the podcast with a small donation. Go to irishillustrated.com/support. Your support will help Irish Illustrated continue to be the leader in coverage of Notre Dame athletics.